It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed on the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
if I had a million dollars,
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we today?
Another fine day in the neighborhood.
Another fine day. I am living the dream, as they say. You know, that song just kind of always just puts a smile on my face.
If I Had a Million Dollars?
Yeah. By the Bare Naked Ladies.
I
love that song.
$1 million.
Kind of gets you kind of ready. It's a good show right before a radio show. Kind of gets you in a good mood, ready to go. We have another hour-long show to go. I am loaded up on coffee as I ran out last time.
59 minutes left.
All right. That's it. Wow, folks. Well, and as we talked about last show, Larry has lots of tangents, so we will be good to go.
Tangentially oriented.
There we go. And I am list-oriented. I have my paper spread out. I have my list. I am ready to go. Today, in the market talk, we will be discussing rising interest rates and what that means for us as individuals, what that means for the economy, and all that good stuff.
You mean interest rates are going up, John?
No, we had the first raise at the end of 2016. That was the first rate increase that the Fed has done in almost a decade.
I was going to say it's been
a long time.
Let's say 2006, 5 years. It's been at least 10 years that rates have been almost at the bottom because I remember the despair of many clients who are trying to get a reasonable rate of return, especially those who were living off of their CD interest from the 80s when CDs were paying 8 to 12%. And as soon as those expired, hit their 5-year, 7-year, 10-year mark, and they're like looking for return, and it hasn't been there.
As I was doing some research on background stuff to create my lists and so forth, they were talking about, and I don't remember this because I'm not as old as you, Larry.
Hey.
The mortgage rates in the high teens. Think about that for just that dramatic pause. Think about that. Mortgage rates in the high teens. Now, I mean, there were some that were like 3%, 2%.
Free money.
Free money, yeah. So, anyway, we will discuss rising interest rates and what all that means. All right.
I do actually remember that. 1980s.
I feel a tangent coming on.
We built our first house in 75, and we had an 8% mortgage and thought it was great. Was paying $256 a month, if I do recall. And 8% seemed like a bargain. Then we got into the 80s. And, of course, fortunately, we were already in our home. But the rates were, you know, if you tried to get into a house, you were paying 12, 13, 14, 15%. I don't know how people did it.
Yeah. And then the CD rates were pretty insane as well. So it was, being an advisor back then must have been easy. Just put everyone in CDs, and they got 15%.
Yeah, no risk, no downside, 15% return for the longest rate that you could get, and it was great until it ran out.
Until they reset. Okay, so we will discuss all that, and then our topic of the day is the list of questions you should bring with you when you meet with a financial advisor.
Why would I do that, John?
Well, because you should probably ask some questions, get to know the person a little bit, get a feel whether you like them or not. And we will go through that list. And then we have our strange news story indeed. And I have a nice little riddle for us to consider in this, in my news story for that.
Riddle away.
So the Fed has raised interest rates. They say that they're going to raise it 3 more times in 2017. I'm a little skeptical on that.
I don't see it, but go ahead.
But so what happens when rates go up? Well, for us as individuals, if you have anything that's an adjustable rate, so your credit cards, your personal loans, if you're in an adjustable rate mortgage, guess what? They're going to adjust, and it won't be in your favor.
If you have an adjustable rate anything, it's a good time, a really good time, in fact, as part of your financial planning process we've been speaking about for the month of January, to determine what those adjustments are and what the period or periodical that they actually go up. You know, interest rates on a mortgage might be quarterly.
Periodical.
Might be semi-annually, might be monthly. But anyone who has an adjustable rate mortgage, you're going to be seeing it going up. Again, not bad. Those who locked in at 2.5%, 2.75%, 3%, even 3.25% on an adjustable rate ARM or adjustable rate mortgage are probably going to see it go up. I'd say 0.25% to 0.5% right now. But keep in mind, as rates continue to go up, you're going to see it to go up additionally down the road.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this chart here, and one of the pieces that it goes back to the 1980s and rate increases. So, they were up in the 20% when Volcker was the Fed chairman. Greenspan, they gradually worked their way down, started climbing back up. Bernanke came in. And roughly 2009, it went down to where it was and stayed there until just recently, but anywhere from 0 to 0.25% was the Fed benchmark, and now we're at 0.25, 2.5.
Unheard of. Unheard of.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No. Did I do that right? Yeah, I did that right. So, yeah, that's kind of insane. So, I mean, keep all that in mind when we're talking about a rising rate environment. That historically speaking, it's still cheap.
It's very cheap.
You know, as you're alluding to, I mean, mortgage rates, you know, being 8% being a good deal. Now you can still get mortgage rates in the fours, which is half of, you know.
Half of eight. Imagine that.
Yeah. So the money is still cheap, as they say. But we have to keep in mind that, you know, the Fed says they're going to continue to raise it. And what are the implications of that? Because we have been in this, you know, non-interest rate environment for so long that companies are used to that and so forth. And now their interest expense will go up because anything that they had that was adjustable is going to adjust up. Any new debt that they try to acquire will be at a higher interest rate. That has a trickle-down effect, not to go with discuss Volcker any longer, but that will have a trickle-down effect. Bond prices go down when interest rates go up. It's a simple mathematical equation. If you look at a fraction, if the denominator, the bottom number, gets bigger, the top number will get smaller. So your bond prices will go down. So if you have bond portfolios, mutual funds, and so forth, you will see that they will start tapering off a little bit. They will come down a little bit, but your yields will go up. So the interest rate that you get on debt will go up. As a strategy, you might want to consider using shorter term bonds for your portfolio during a rising interest rate environment, because they will reset quicker for you and you can partake in the higher interest rates. I still contend personally that I just don't see a rapid rate environment for the Fed and for our economy right now. I mean, I get back to the competing forces. You know, looking at some of the articles that I read in researching all this for today, one of the big numbers that they use is what's called the U6. So when the media reports on unemployment, they are using the U3, which is a bull beep number to begin with. But the U6 is a little bit more reliable because that takes into account the people that have left the workforce and have stopped looking for a job, and those that are what we call underemployed. And at the low, before the Great Recession, if you will, back in 2007, 2008, the U6 was 8.9%. It got as high in early 2010 as 17.3% and has come back down to 9.3%. So the Fed is looking at that saying, okay, that is a growing economy. You know, we need to kind of rein in any potential inflation and so forth. But if you look at GDP, and I talked about this last week, this is the lowest GDP rate where the Fed has raised interest rates. So in September, it was 3.2%. The quarter before, just 3 months prior, it was 1.4 GDP growth. And that's, you know, that's looking at the growth of our economy. One quarter, as you said, Larry, does not make a trend.
Does not make a trend anywhere close to it. And just in general, most people, when you talk about interest rates rising, they think of their credit card debt. If they have some, we recommend against it. But if you have it, get it paid off. They think about the fact that their mortgage, if they are into an adjustable rate mortgage, will go up. If they were fortunate enough during all of the refinances that have occurred over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years to lock in to a 3-point-something, 4-point-something, I would say you're not going to see it any lower than that anytime soon. It will be going up, so stick with what you've got. Get it paid off. They also think somewhat in terms, particularly the older generation, if you will, about about those who are investing or would like to invest in CDs, the old certificates of deposit, that their rates actually are going to be above 1% for the first time in many, many years. Now, you know, with the cost of inflation,
think about that for a second.
The cost of inflation, you're still losing money, even if you're getting 1% on your CD, but it's certainly better than 0.28 or 0.5 or point whatever it happens to be. But interest rate changes affect so much more than that. Thinking about, as John mentioned, the corporate debt. When companies go out and borrow money for expansion, for growth, they finance it typically through bonds, through debt, and they're going to be paying a little higher interest rate, which is going to have to go into their cash flow, into their economic picture. One of the things that many people don't think about is the effect it has on insurance, particularly life insurance, but you could extrapolate that over to car, home, auto insurance, because remember, insurance company is spreading the risk. When an insurer charges you a particular rate for insurance on a house or a car or whatever it happens to be, they're making some actuarial assumptions about the rate of return that they can get on the money that you give them to invest to actually pay for that particular policy. So if interest rates are going up, there's a possibility that the cost of the insurance might go down in the case of property and casualty type insurance because they're getting a higher return on the money that you've given them to take care of in lieu of paying for a claim down the road. Now, the other side of the coin is when repairs are made, interest rates may be higher, so therefore making repairs could be greater. The biggest impact I've seen on life insurance particularly happened in the 80s. We'll go back to the 80s as they were.
Great decade.
Because many universal life policies, which are based strictly upon the interest rate that the insurer can get from the general assets of the company. And many of those policies sold in the 80s that assumed, if you will, we know what assuming means to us and to you, we won't go there, but it does
That's
mean-
another beep.
It's another beep, yeah. They assumed interest rates in excess of what was reasonable because when the interest rates were at 15, 20%, they were saying, 12% is reasonable. We'll assume this particular universal life policy will earn 12% internal rate of return. Therefore, it'll be sufficient to pay for the life insurance, the death benefit, if you will, down the road. And as we got into the 90s and interest rates went back to more of a level of normalcy and those 12% projections didn't pan out, as it were, many of those policies and policy owners got a letter from the insurer saying, oops, oh, by the way, you know, your assumption on your policy was at 12% and interest rates are not such to support that anymore. So therefore, instead of paying us $200 a month, now you have to pay us $400 a month or your policy is going to lapse. So we saw a lot of those. Remember, on universal life and variable life, you are sharing the risk of the investment with the insurance company as opposed to whole life where they assume the entire risk. And term life, they're assuming the entire risk, again, based on projections of rates of return and whatnot. So interest rate changes affect pretty much everything in our lives, not just the interest rate you're paying and what you're getting on your CD.
Excellent information. That was
thank you.
That was a great little tangent there. I had overlooked the insurance aspect of all this as I focus more on investments and my tunnel vision, if you will. But in a quick summary, what does this mean? If you have any debt that's adjustable, it's going to adjust up. My humble opinion, which does not reflect the opinion of anyone with a sane mind, is that the Fed's not going to be as aggressive as they have stated. I just can't see it happening. If you look at how 2016 played out, every time the Fed said that they were going to raise rates, something happened, whether it was the fear of the China economy that held them off. They talked about raising rates pretty quickly in 2016, and we only got one, which was at the end of the year. We still have a lot of competing forces, as I talked about last week. We have Trumponomics, the Trump effect. If some of his policies do actually come to fruition, we will be looking at things being more expensive. If he cuts off trade with China, all those products that we buy at very cheap prices will suddenly become more expensive. So there's a lot of things in play. And historically speaking, when the Fed goes through rate increases, it's a slow process. And I think certainly with a new administration and someone like Trump and his power with his Twitter account, we'll keep Janet focused here and probably not going off crazy raising rates very quickly. And I just don't see the strong growth in our economy right now that warrants a lot of that.
It's just not there. With the companies that we work with, John, some of the segments in terms of infrastructure and those types of things are doing well. They're making money. They're having, I could say, banner years in 2016. We'll see what 2017 brings. But nevertheless, there are a lot of areas that are suffering still. They're not hiring additional people yet. They're anticipating the ability to do that as things turn around. If tax rates do get lowered for corporations, that will help because small business is what drives the economy. It's what drives our future. So good things on the horizon, we hope.
We hope, absolutely. So our topic of the day, which is brought to us by Chef Shop.
What is our topic today brought to us by Chef Shop, John?
Our topic today brought to us by Chef Shop is 10, and we'll go like we did last week. We had a top 10 list, and we came up with 11. Our top 10 list, and I already have 11 on here, are questions to ask your advisor, your potential advisor. And this ties into our theme of the month for January, which is individual planning and building out your retirement plan, your financial plan. And it's brought to us by Chef Shop.
Chef Shop, located in Edwardsville. They're in the Schnucks Plaza next to Target at 2320 Troy Road. Phone number 618-659-9840 and email chefsshop, chefs.shoppe at prodigy.net. Go in and see Scott and Nancy Schneider, the owners. They'd love to visit with you a little bit. They'll probably hate me for saying that, but they have time. They're very, very friendly. They
Absolutely.
Do a wonderful job for their customers. Gotten through the holiday season and New Year's and kind of regrouping for spring. In fact, we hope to have one of them on the show here in the next week or two to kind of talk about things that are going on. They are underwriting the show, and we appreciate that to help us out, help WSIE FM 88.7 The Sound to stay on the air. We want to keep it that way for long past the June date of 2018, which is kind of a deadline date. So if you're thinking about doing a little advertising in terms of underwriting a show and sponsorship, we would love to hear from you, as well as Steve Jankowski, station manager, to see what your interests are, how we can help with that. So thanks to Scott, thanks to Nancy for helping us out and underwriting the show from the Chef Shop Gourmet Kitchen Store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day outright.
Absolutely. So, questions to ask your advisor. Right off the top of the head, my head anyway, which doesn't have much hair on it. Experience. Ask the advisor what experience they have. Whether it's a bio or something, but you certainly want to be working with someone that has been around a little bit, if they are just starting out and young, maybe you want to make sure that their supervisor is someone that's been around for a little while, has seen some things and experiences, because nothing can replace experience.
Well, the more things change, John, as we've discovered in the years we've been doing this, the more, to a certain extent, they stay the same. So it's great for a new young advisor to have gotten their credentials. I know we'll be talking about that as one of your line items, and to had significant education. But there's really is nothing takes a place of experience. You have to have lived through the market up, the market down. The reaction of most investors is to sell low and buy high, exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing. So we manage emotion as much as anything else. So that first meeting is a critical meeting, just like I'm having this next week with the father and mother of one of my existing clients of some time, to discuss their needs. And first meeting is just a get-to-know-you meeting. Experience is a good way of determining what exactly the type of experience and efforts that I've had in my practice and John's had in his practice that can translate into helping them to reach their goals and objectives.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you're looking and asking these questions, trust your gut. If you are leaving the meeting and you're checking to make sure your rings and watches are still on, you may want to be considering someone else for your financial advisor. You want to make sure that you have that rapport, you have that good feeling in your gut, and it's always a good place to kind of start. With experience, you want to look at the education and certifications that they may have. You know, Larry and I both have many certifications and to support and help us stay on top. Because with certifications, in order to maintain them, you have to have so much continuing education. It helps you keep on top of the industry as things change. You know, Larry and I work a lot in the 401k retirement plan for companies. That is one incredibly fluid environment, if you will. We'll see what happens by April of this year, but that's a constantly changing landscape. Fees and fee transparency. We will put out on our website, the Financial Cafe website, which is www.thefinancialcafe.us.
Very good, John.
I got it right this time.
You got it.
I had enough coffee. I think the Alzheimer's has left me,
mm-hmm.
at least for now. But we will have, there's a form out there that you can use. You hand it to the prospective advisor that you're meeting with and ask them to fill it out, and they will be required to fill it out, and you can get a good idea of the fees that you're paying and how much they are and what you're going to get for those fees.
And that brings us up a good point, because during the discussion I was meeting with a client who was making a sizable contribution to their 401k plan. They had a good year in 2016. They were deferring the $18,000 they are allowed, being 49 years old and under, as a deferral into their plan. And then from the two companies that he owns, he was able to make another $30,000-plus contribution. So he's putting in almost $50,000 into his plan. And as we were doing that in late December, around the 30th, the discussion was again about fees and investments. He was looking at some dividend-paying stocks, which is probably not a bad place to be. This particular individual was a stockbroker, believe it or not. He had his Series 7 license. He worked for one of the big companies trading stocks and got out of it, decided that wasn't for him, and started his own company. So I would consider him more knowledgeable than the average consumer about investing. We were talking about investments and fees, and at the level that he's investing, which is under $250,000, we are currently at 70 basis points, or 0.7% as an advisory fee. And his misunderstanding, or his dementia, was that he was paying 1% or more. And I reminded him that was not the case, that we don't believe that that is appropriate on any size account, much less that size account. And he was actually paying 70 basis points on what we were doing, and that we were getting a proper allocation to help him grow to the future. So it's important to know, because there are advisors out there. As we talk about credentials, I'm going to digress a little bit.
Go for it.
Tangentially speaking, is that a word, John? A lot of advisors charge a lot of money for giving advice, and we don't blame them for charging for their advice. We all have to make a living. We all have to provide for the needs of our clients. But how much advice you're giving and what you charge for it, you know, be wary of those who are charging 2% or more for giving investment advice.
I read an article just the other day that the average investor is paying north of 2%. That's insane.
That's not unusual. And keeping in mind, you know, if you're paying your advisor 2%, the underlying investment, if you're in a mutual fund, can be, you know, 70, 80 basis points to a point and a quarter. If it's in an emerging growth or international fund, all of a sudden you've got to earn 3% plus or north side of 3% just to break even. That doesn't count inflation. Pick a number, you know, 3%, 4%, 5% inflation.
That's what the government
does. Yeah, the government just says, we think it's this. Realistically, John and I both tend to agree that depending on the marketplace you're talking about, healthcare certainly is north of 6-7%, and maybe double digits even. But normal inflation, you know, for food, for gas, for the things we use every day, probably, you know, in the 4-6% range. So if we pick 5 and you got 3% in fees and management expense, 8% is your break-even point.
Break even to have the same purchasing power.
Exactly, going forward. So that's tough to do in any environment, mm-hmm. even when the market has done as well as it has recently. So know what your fees are. If you're paying more than 1%, I'd say I'd question it. I certainly would. What are you getting? Why are they charging what they're charging?
And see, there you go, jumping ahead again on my list.
How does it compare?
That was item number 6 on my list, Larry.
Number 6. I like getting ahead, John. but, you know, how does that compare against the fees that are reasonable? And again, in our opinion, and with the Department of Labor fiduciary rule, reasonableness is going to have to be quantified. Because if the rule goes into effect as it stands currently, then there is a reasonableness requirement to be able to prove that what you are offering to the client is indeed at a reasonable fee. The jury is still out. No pun intended there. The jury is still out.
You did that on purpose.
I did not. The jury is still out on what reasonableness is. There are vendors out there that I was looking at a software package yesterday that they're hawking as an individual retirement account package to determine what is reasonable and what would constitute reasonable fees if you recommended moving a participant into an IRA using that particular investment. That's their opinion. And, you know, they're basing it obviously on averages on a national basis, on different types of investments based on asset allocation and whatnot. But what is reasonable and what are the courts going to say? Because under the new rule, it is going to get thrown into the courts to decide what is reasonable. So you first should know what is reasonable to you, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely. So your DOL reasonableness discussion takes me to item 4 on my list, which is fiduciary. If the fiduciary rule does stand, as we anticipate it will, by April, that your advisor will be held to what's called the fiduciary standard for all qualified money, which is your IRAs, 401ks, that, you know, tax-deferred type of accounts. By that, they will be held to everything that they do has to be in your best interest, which includes the fees, as we're discussing. Ask your advisor if they're going to be serving as a fiduciary for your non-IRA type of money. So if you have just a regular old account or a joint account with them, a trust account, are they serving as a fiduciary on those accounts as well, or is it just going to be on the IRA money? Larry and I have always assumed, and we think any advisor that does this for a living should be considered a fiduciary, because I can't think of another position where you don't want or expect what's in your best interest.
Well, and I don't mean to reiterate those things that we've talked about and that are out there in the public, but
it just got to scratch your head.
It just reminds me of going to your physician And I go regularly, twice a year, have my checkup, blood work done, make sure everything seems to still be working, and, you know, we're moving onward and upward, still above ground. So that's a good sign.
Green side of the grass.
But I never had my physician answer a question I had about something by saying, well, you know, it's really not in your best interest, but it's suitable if we did this.
It's okay.
So it's okay. I could put you on, you know, prednisone. I could put you on an antibiotic, and it's probably suitable for what you may have. We don't really know. We haven't run enough tests, but it's probably suitable, but, you know, it may not be in your best interest. If they did that, I would be out the door so fast that, you know, it wouldn't hit me in the rear, believe me. And that's what we're saying, is any advisor who is not going to serve in a fiduciary capacity and is not acting in your best interest, that's what they're doing. They're saying, well, what I'm going to sell you, because that's what they do, they sell product. What I'm going to sell you is suitable, and that could be meet that definition of suitability. But if it doesn't meet the definition of in your best interest, as it could be defended in a court of law, then I would probably keep looking. You know, go back to the interview questions that we're going to continue to talk about here, and talk to a few more advisors and find one that will act first, foremost, and only in your best interest in a fiduciary capacity, because they will get paid to do their job in helping you and a fair amount, but not an unreasonable amount, which is a lot of the people selling products get, in our opinion, paid somewhat unreasonably for the advice and product that they're providing.
Absolutely. So, kind of a quick little recap here. We talked about fees, fee transparency. We will have a form out on our the Financial Cafe website that you can look at, print off, and use when you go to meet with an advisor. The experience of the advisor, education, certifications. Are they serving in a fiduciary capacity? Item number six was, what services are you going to get for your fees? Larry jumped ahead a little bit. We skipped over five. I'll come back to that since we're talking about six. But I'm getting a timeout sign.
That means halfway there.
Oh, halfway there. Thank you, sir. I didn't know what that meant.
We got your signal straight.
I don't have a mass comm degree. I didn't know. I didn't know if you were calling timeout or what was going on there. But so we're halfway through. Well, that one we cannot talk about. Thank you, sir.
On
I
the air,
appreciate
yeah.
that. But it was along the lines of the one finger salute there. Thank you. Okay. Services.
Only if you're Italian.
Yeah. I hope you choke on that coffee. Okay. Services. What should you ask them? What am I going to receive for the fees that I'm paying? Am I going to get a quarterly performance report? Am I going to get an annual? How often are you going to call me? Or am I going to have to call you? It's absolutely fair to ask those questions so everyone knows what to expect.
Expectations have to be managed. And if you don't ask, then you're going to be disappointed, because if your expectations are that you receive a phone call, a return phone call within 2 hours, that may not be reasonable. In my case, and I think in John's also, we're out with 401k plans. We're doing installations. We're doing all types of educational programs, including this show, by the way, which takes time and effort to both plan and to put on record. But I always return phone calls within 24 hours. And I think that's reasonable. If my client doesn't think that's reasonable, I need to know that. If I'm willing to make an exception in that case, I might even give my cell and say, fine, here's my cell. Call me on it. If I answer, I'm available. If not, I'm in a meeting. I'll call you when I get back. But if that expectation is communicated, then we're both on the same page. But I have to digress. Recently dealing with a bank, and obviously we did not communicate our expectations, because I expected a phone call back at least within 24 hours on questions that I might have had regarding our relationship and some potential business we were looking at. And there were sometimes days went by and there was no communication, you know, even a phone call, an email saying, hey, we don't have any answers yet, but we're working on it, would have been nice. But anyway.
Okay. Feel better now?
I do.
Awesome. So services, but I've always used the expression, the gap between expectation and reality is measured in disappointment.
I like that, John.
So I have my moments.
Did you make that up?
No, I can't take credit for it. I heard it somewhere from someone, and I can't give them credit because I don't even remember that. So, the average client info. Ask the person, how many clients do you have? What is the average account size? If you're going in with $50,000 and their average account is $2 million,
prepare to be disappointed.
that gap is going to come into play and is going to be measured in disappointment. Not that there's anything wrong with an advisor that has the average account balance of $2 million. Kudos to them. But if you're going in with $50,000, just know that they may say, well, we treat all of our clients the same, but in reality, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. And if they have a staff or they have support, administrative people to respond to specific needs, maybe that's good enough. You know, you and only you can determine if your expectations can be met by the structure, the overall operation that they have.
What is the investment philosophy of the advisor? This is a good one, because if you are like me, a buy hold, we make minor tweaks here. We don't make wholesale moves in and out. We don't believe in market timing. I can give many examples of why market timing does not work, and there wouldn't be people in jail for doing it if it did work legally. But what is the investment philosophy of the advisor? If that doesn't really tie into how you think things should be managed, you may want to consider someone else, because this is a relationship. You need to remember that this is a trusted relationship, and both of you need to be on the same page. Ask for referrals. Say, hey, can I have, you know, three names of people that I can call? I have a sheet in my office which has that I've already talked to clients that said, go ahead, you can use me as a referral. If someone asks that question, I can give it to them right then and there. And then they can call those people and get, you know, some additional background information on me and just kind of a feel for how things work when I serve as an advisor for a retirement plan or for an individual.
And it may take a little extra work on your part to call up that individual and talk to them a little bit about their experience. I've got clients that I'm still working with that I started over 20 years ago with. So for some reason, they've stuck around. Now, hopefully, because of the results we've provided, I've had a number of them who have gone on to retire and live and continue to live very enjoyable lives in retirement, because what we put together 20 years ago through up market, down market, sideways market, and everything else, because they did listen, they did have a written plan with specific time frames and objectives. We implemented and we monitored the plan and made changes along the way, and all of a sudden, they're living the dream, so to speak, of their retirement, which they had professed. Keeping in mind, you know, you may go to our website, you may go to John has LinkedIn, I have LinkedIn, I have a Facebook page, but keep in mind we are severely limited by regulation as to testimonials and to recommendations from clients. We are not allowed to put a lot of those on the website. They can't go out and post glowing letters because we are restricted from doing that. So if you find a lot of those on somebody's website or Facebook or whatnot, then they're violating a whole bunch of securities regulations. So I would be somewhat suspect. But we do both have clients who would be more than happy to share their experience, which is all we ask them to do, good, bad, and indifferent about what we've done over the years and the success that we've had. And, you know, 20-plus years experience has, I think, a lot to say about the consistency of the results that we anticipate with our clients' help and cooperation.
And on that thought, ask them to explain a client that they recently lost. What were the reasons for that? And as you ask these questions, because if you're like me, I'm a very skeptical person. Well, of course you're not going to give
me. No, not you, John.
I know. But, they're going to make something up. They're not going to. Look at body language. Look at how these, not necessarily what's being said, but how it's being said. If my wife is listening, she's going to be rolling her eyes because I use that expression probably way too often. But look at the body language. Look at, did they actually answer your question, or did you kind of get a roundabout discussion? But you want to make sure that you're reading the body language, you're getting a feel, and again, go with your gut check. If you don't believe that answers are truthful, you want to go interview someone else, but ask them, you lost a client. Please tell me that situation. Well, someone passed away. The money went to the beneficiaries, and that's a legitimate reason. But you kind of get a feel for how honest and so forth the person is because, again, it's a trusted relationship, and you want to make sure that you have that trust in that person.
One of the questions that may or may not be on your list, John, but I like to ask from my experience over the years, and that is, if I've got the husband and wife or a significant other couples sitting there, is describe to me what our relationship would be 12 months from now, and how do you expect it to, what expectations do you have of the future? What's our relationship going to look like in a year? What will have happened in terms of investments and communication that would make you feel satisfied that we've accomplished what we've set out to do today?
Checking off my list here, checking it once, checking it twice. What happens if I want to leave? I want to terminate the relationship. There are many investment products out there that have what we call surrender charges. And you want to make sure before you get into that relationship, that type of relationship, that you understand exactly what potential penalties could be if you were to terminate said relationship. And sometimes it can be kind of expensive. So that's probably not someone that you want to be working with. If someone were to ask me that question, I would personally tell them, you tell me where you want to move this money. I don't want to understand why you're leaving. Obviously, would try to retain a business. But if the person is actually set on leaving, help them and make the transition as smooth as possible, and there would be no additional fees. So you want that type of situation, and I believe that is a valid question to ask. Number 11 on my list, and this is where you really want to watch for the face expression, but can I bring my CPA or my attorney to the meeting? Speaking for me, I welcome that person coming to the meeting because
we love that.
If the advisor is on the up and up, they are going to absolutely would love to have that person there because it helps facilitate and helps communication and helps make sure that the plan we put in place is the right plan. But that's a good question where you can look at the face expressions, the body language, and did they actually answer the question that you're asking? So that's our top 10, which ended up being 11. We gave a bonus one again this week as far as questions that you should be asking your advisor. That list of questions should be part of the material that you go when you meet the advisor. And we had that discussion last week on what are the things you need to bring. Make sure you bring that list of questions with you. On our top 10, which ended up being 11 last week as well.
It's a two-way street. The advisor is there to learn and to interview you to find out what your expectations, your goals, desires, wants, needs are, and to, in my case and John's also, to determine how can we best fulfill your objectives, because if we feel that we can't meet your needs, then we're going to tell you that. So you interview them as well as them interviewing you. And quite frankly, in the interview process, I'm going to ask an individual, who is your CPA or accountant? Who do you have an attorney that you confide in, that you've worked with? Going back to the question of wills, powers of attorney, healthcare directives, who have you worked with? Because those are all three of those components, the legal aspect of your individual situation, the accounting and tax aspect of your situation, all have to play in to how your money is invested, where it's invested. I've got a client I'll be meeting with between now and April where it is a special needs situation, and they're in a particular type of investment where they need to make a decision, and it needs to be made before April or they lose the opportunity to make that decision. So that's something they're not going to know that. And if I don't bring it up, I don't bring it to them well in advance so we can discuss it, then shame on me, because I'm really not doing my job in terms of helping them.
Absolutely. And when you have that open communication, I'm thinking of another situation, not even a client, someone that used to be a client, and I know their personal situation through discussions and communication, and was at a seminar, and there was a product that was being offered by this company that was unique to this company, and I started scratching my head, and I said to myself, this may make sense for them. And it was just because of those communications, those discussions, that on both sides of that story, that I was able to come up with an idea that potentially could help my friend and former client along the way. So yeah, now we're going to be moving on to, and I love this segment, I can't wait, this kind of fits my personality, but strange news indeed. And since I went first last week, I'm going to let Mr. Lexal go first this week. But the way this segment works is this is your chance to interact and potentially win a free T-shirt. But Larry will present a strange news story. I will present a strange news story. Then you go out to our website, thefinancialcafe.us, and vote. Our email addresses are on the website. Shoot us an email saying which one did you think was the winner that week. And we will pick a name from that list and send you a T-shirt.
Well, my story in terms of a strange story is Facebook knows way too much about those who are using it. The story came out this week that Facebook, as it's titled, Facebook has a lot of dirt on us. And I don't mean the kind that's on the ground. When an individual, based on their interpretation and their study that they had done, when an individual is out on Facebook and making communications more than twice a day, then likely they either are single or want to be single. And those who are in committed relationships post less than twice a day, or maybe only every couple of days. So Facebook thinks that if you're tweeting, if you're using Facebook on a repetitive basis, that you probably are single, and they're going to kind of put you in that category based on the study. And you can Google that and take a look at it. So are you single, or do you just want to be single and you're not telling anybody? See how often that when couples decide to spend more time together, online interactions give way to more interactions outside of the online capacity. So kind of a strange new story. And I'll throw this one not out for the vote, but just if you saw the news story, which was on this week about two toddlers, actually, brothers.
Wait, you're putting two stories out there against my one?
Two, well, you can do two. So I got to keep him on his toes. A toddler who pulled a drawer of clothing drawers, so to speak, over by climbing up on the cabinet and pulling it over on him, and the brother supposedly saved the other one by pushing it off. And we just, everything you see on the news and the internet is not true, believe it or not.
It's not?
I mean, there are those who, if it's on the internet or on the news, it's got to be true. But if you take a real hard look at that, I'm a bit skeptical about the fact there were no clothes in any of the drawers of the dresser, that the little one was able to even move it if it had been full of clothes, potentially may not have even fallen over had it actually had anything in it. And the fact that I'm told anyway, I'll trust John's reporting, that the individual, the parent in the relationship, actually works for a company that does the nanny cams, which just happened to capture this event. So was it staged or was it real?
Okay, so my one story has to go up against your two. That's fine, because this story, I think, is worthy to be able to take on your two stories.
We'll see.
And it's a riddle, so if you honestly can answer the question without doing an internet search.
There is such a thing?
I may even throw in an additional T-shirt if this story ends up winning for you, but you have to answer this riddle. One twin was born first, but the other is older. So a lady gave birth to twins, and the first one born is actually the younger of the twins.
That's a good one, John. I have to admit that I did not come up with the answer until you told me what it was.
So my wife works in labor and delivery. This story even stumped her. I can't say that I stumped her. I'm just reading a story here. So www.thefinancialcafe.us. Larry's email information is on there. My email information is on there. Vote for which story of the three that was presented today. And then we will pick a name from the winning story and send you a t-shirt.
We might even let you come in on the air. I didn't talk to John about that, but, you know, you never know. We can see.
Okay, well, we'll have to check with our attorneys and so forth. But, yeah, I'm sure we could we can work something out.
And our thanks to The Chef Shop, our sponsor for today's segment, as well as Premier Fiduciary Services. But Chef Shop has better coffee than Premier Fiduciary Services, so I got to go with them, you know, Nancy and Scott.
I use Chef Shop's coffee.
Well, okay.
So it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. But we love the coffee. A good cup of coffee starts every day out right, and I couldn't start a day without a good cup of coffee. So couldn't be much truer than that. We hope to have one of them on the air here in the ensuing week or two, as we will have at least one guest join us per month as we go through our segments. Next month, we're doing Small Business Month. For those of you who own a small business or who hope to own a small business, it's a good time to tune in 88.7 WSIE, The Sound, to gather some information as we continue in January, talk about Individual Planning Month. We touched on a financial advisor. We touched on what questions you should be asking them, as well as what materials you need to bring into a planning meeting. And you probably, we didn't mention this, but you probably ought to plan at least an hour to an hour and a half, depending on how complex your situation is for the initial meeting. And then the planner will go to work and do some analysis. And second meeting should be within a week or 10 days, I would think, of the initial meeting, if schedules permit. And again, maybe just gathering some additional data and verifying information and coming up with some tentative proposed solutions that will be evaluated for further information. So as we're coming down the last 5 minutes or so on the show, I just wanted to touch base. Everybody likes to be a prognosticator, so this one came off of what's going to happen in 2017.
I can tell you. What do you want to know? I got it. I can prognosticate.
Who is going to be in the Super Bowl?
Who will be in the Super Bowl? The Dallas Cowboys and New England Patriots.
You've read this.
No. Just two best teams.
It says the New England Patriots will compete with the Tom Brady Revenge Tour. I didn't know it was a revenge tour, but okay.
Interesting.
And that they will beat the Dallas Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
I'm reversing it. I think the Cowboys will win.
The Cowboys, yeah. I don't follow football, so I really have no idea.
Okay.
but I throw that one out there. And another prognostication was, and I have no idea, I would have to Google it, but that Trump's first Supreme Court nominee is Allison Eid, E-I-D. I have no idea who that is. You know
who
that
sure.
is?
Nope, I do not.
Allison Eid, so look, appears to be a female, as his first Supreme Court nominee. I assume we will know here in the next 6 months, if not before, what that is. So just a couple of things coming up. But I do look forward to a great 2017. I think the overall economy is improving with the election behind us, pro or con, depending on where you sit. We're moving forward, and it looks like
We're moving.
Well, I think we're moving forward, and that's better than moving backwards.
Absolutely.
So I think we're looking for a good year, some growth and expansion. Interest rates be going up a little bit. That'll help our retirees, and there'll be some other solutions. If the DOL fiduciary rule does take effect April 10th, it will change our industry forever. And there's still more fallout to come on that. We'll keep you posted as things develop. But in general, what else you have today, John?
Did I mention that I have twins that were born? Did I mention that story?
No, you didn't.
No. I wasn't expecting that question.
I stumped him that time.
I'm out.
I stumped him that time.
John's out.
John is out. We got a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
So,
what coffee are we drinking today?
What coffee are we drinking today?
I'm still on that pecan. So I'm almost out of that. I want to go back up and get the old 80, the 89er, Not you.
The old 89er. Oh, golden pecan. Yeah. That's the chunks of buttery southern pecans mixed into the popularly flavored coffee, lusciously rich, and it is delicious. I have to agree. The golden pecan coffee from the Chef Shop is a definite winner. And if you stop by the office, if we don't have a pot that's already going and hot, we'll make some for you. That's a promise.
So what to expect on the? And if you heard papers in the background, that was me scrambling to. To find this piece that I'm looking at now, but this is our bi-monthly planner. So the next 2 weeks in January, we will have one of those. We'll have the Chef Shop on and they will cover the topic of the month as an interview, and even get some marketing or what they're seeing in the marketplace as the economy turns around, hopefully. And then the last one for the individual planning month will be, what should you expect from a well-designed financial plan? So we have provided all that you need to know between the previous two segments, the one back in July 9th of 2016. So you've gotten everything on the front end done. What should you expect in return? So you provided all the data. You should be very satisfied and happy with the information that is provided out of that data. And as Larry mentioned, February is Small Business Month. We'll be talking about what do you need to gather when you go in, if you're a small business owner, if you want a loan. And we will actually have a SBA lender on one of the shows to talk about that. How to plan for retirement when you're a small business owner, because cash flow is always a difficult situation. The last one will be, you're ready to retire. How do you successfully transfer this business to family members, to someone else, or just flat out sell it? But what are some of the things you need to consider with that?
Succession planning is key. I've been involved with a lot of businesses, and succession planning is a tough topic, especially when there are kids involved, because they, quite frankly, the parent often doesn't want to hear it, but quite frankly, some of the kids or all of the kids may or may not be capable of running the company. So that's why most businesses fail before the third, certainly before the fourth generation, is because the transfer is made and the people who it's transferred to really don't share the same goals, objectives, the same drive as the patriarch, if you will. And that can spell problems down the road. So we'll be talking a lot about small business and how it relates. So thanks to WSIE 88.7 FM, The Sound, here on the campus, beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. It is winter. It's cold out there. And boy, do I remember from my days out here as a student walking from the parking lots to class.
They had parking lots?
And they had parking. They had the fan parking lots.
Isn't that like the post where you went up with the horse and you tied the horse to
That was a little before my time.
Okay.
Not much.
Okay.
Not much, but a little before. And making that trek of, I don't know, how sometimes it seemed like miles from the parking lot into the building. But at least
depending on how cold it was, it got longer.
Yeah, the buildings were typically nice and warm. And, of course, when spring came and warmed up outside, the building stayed warm. You know, they just never could get it straight. But nevertheless. So thanks from WSIE, John Graney, J-G-R-A-N-E-Y, at Nicol, N-I-C-O-L, financial.com, or Lexo, L-E-X-O-W, and nicolfinancial.com. Vote for the oddest story, and we'll get you a T-shirt for your efforts, as well as, I don't know, we may have a couple other things coming up as we go forward, John. So say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
We'll catch you next time. Have a good one.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.